Jeez.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club. And now, here are your hosts, Pete LePage, Justin Taylor, and Eric
Allen!
All right, hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I am Pete.
And that's our cranky man of the booth, Sports Man!
Oh, man!
So cranky.
Yeah.
So cranky. I really like that song you played before the show that was a bunch of frogs singing.
Yeah.
It was like...
I have to answer you.
Wow. That's a good point. That's a good point.
Very good point. Man, don't you love these carefree days we all have? Yeah. Such a great... It's great being so irresponsible.
Yeah.
You,
have
you, know, you can do whatever you want. Yeah, I hope nothing ever comes up that would shatter these carefree, irresponsible days.
Yeah, what kind of thing could... Shower,
you guys. I've taken on the responsibility of becoming a neighborhood watch, so I've got a lot of. I can't be as carefree as I used to be. So
that's what I'm putting out there.
Yeah, cool. It's a lot of responsibility.
A monochrome of.
What have you done?
I am here to say that Alex is having a baby.
Yeah! Yeah! Which the most. The exciting part about that is I am a comic book fan who has had sex.
Whoa!
I hadn't even thought of that.
That's why I'm the host of the show.
Oh, cool. Well, feel free to tell us all about it.
Do you guys want like a demonstration?
No!
Don't use me! Why are you using me?
We should start the show.
Yeah, we have a great show for you. I'm really excited.
Were you just
about
wrestling? It just happened by
accident. That's how it happens. That's how it happens, guys. It starts with wrestling and it ends with babies. Ladies and gentlemen, we have an awesome show for you tonight. We have three great guests. I'm going to try very hard to get their names right. Ladies and gentlemen, Andres Vera Martinez, Vito Del Sante, and Pat Cashin. Before they were famous, Babe Ruth.
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Vito's a writer. I was the illustrator for the book. It basically tells a story about Babe Ruth when he was a kid and how he became famous. And basically, he grew up in Baltimore, so it kind of goes into how he got into some trouble when he was a kid, and then he eventually got adopted by...
St. Mary's in Baltimore. They're an all-boys school. Yeah. They're kind of an industrial school. I wouldn't call it an orphanage, but because George wasn't, not George, the Babe wasn't an orphan, but his family kind of gave responsibility to the brothers of the school, so they kind of raised, they taught kids how to do, like,
shirt making,
probably tire making, you know, like,
galvanizing. I have a question. How did you invent the idea of a man who's really good at this ball hitting game?
Yeah, no, I didn't really get it either. It was pretty crazy the world that he lives in.
Yeah.
Where there's people that are good at physical activity.
Yeah, yeah. Did you kind of elaborate?
No, guys, I think of like the ball is a super villain. The man is the justice.
Oh, right. And he was like Captain B.
Yeah.
Or Batman?
Oh!
Congratulations, you have won the show. Seriously, talk about how you got hooked up with this project. Was this something that came to you? Was this something that you guys pitched? Or how did that work out?
I got it.
What happened was James Owen, who did a fabulous series back in the late 80s, Star Child, did it for Image for a little while. He had written a novel for kids called the Imaginarium Panopticon, which is really incredibly tough to say.
Why you forgot that?
Yeah, I just forgot.
We've been friends for a long time, and he just hipped me to the fact that Simon and Schuster were looking to do graphic novels, and so on a Wednesday I spoke to Paul Kreit, who is the guy in charge of all the public publicity and stuff, and he said, all right, well, here's an editor's name. That was on Wednesday. Thursday I had to trade an email with the editor. Friday I was taking the meet. So it was just bang, bang, bang. Like,
it happened that fast.
It happened that fast. And then what happened was we were scheduled to do an Albert Einstein and with Mike Lilly, who did Black Terror for Dynamite, I think it was. So Mike and I were doing Albert Einstein, and he was falling behind on his deadline. So I had to write both. They wanted to get Babe Ruth out in time for baseball season. And luckily,
I saved the day.
He saved the day.
Nice.
Cool. And you were saying before the show that it was essentially you guys were like hooked up on a blind date.
Right.
Were you nervous? Were you nervous?
You know, the worst part about it is I wrote the script, and when I write scripts, I always try to make it personal. So in the script, it was like, hey, Mike, try to do this. Mike, don't forget this. You know, hey, Mike.
Mike
remember?
This, Mike that.
You know. Uh-oh. Trouble in paradise.
You know, you never know what you're going to get, you know, like, and you didn't, like, we didn't know the situation was going to come up the way it did, but, you know, it was, the best way to put it is it was a happy accident. Cool. You know, like, I couldn't have been more proud of the way the book came out.
Yeah, it's great.
And it seems like you guys are working on another project together.
Yeah,
right?
We're trying. Yeah,
yeah. Let's actually go to the next slide. So this is from the next project you guys are working on, which is called Fist of Dracula. Is that correct? Right.
It's a little bit more up our alley.
Yeah.
Is it before they were famous, Fist of Dracula?
So is that guy on the left a rugby player, or how does that
lacrosse?
Lacrosse. Nice. Tough sport.
Tell us a little bit about this book.
Well, what happened was I just got tired of kind of creating characters from scratch and not going anywhere with them. And I just, you know, there's a lot of an investment of time, but there's also an investment of emotion whenever you're doing this stuff. And I felt like if I'm going to create something or, you know, come up with a story, I don't want to go to so far as to make my own character in it. Because if someone rejects it, they're not rejecting my character, and it's like rejecting a kid.
Right.
So I started looking at...
Think about that.
Yeah. So I started looking at public domain characters like the Project Superpowers heroes, and I just kept coming across Dracula and Dracula and Dracula all over the place. So I just figured, you know what, why don't I just write a Dracula story? And I wasn't really interested in doing anything gothic or anything kind of anything that you've seen before. You know, I didn't want to do Dracula 2000 or Blade Trinity or something. You know, I didn't want to do something that was modern and that dealt with Dracula being in a modern world. I just thought, well, you know, I play to your strengths. I love crime noir. I love pulp. Why not do a pulp version of Dracula? And that's what it really is. It's just Dracula as if he were the Shadow.
Cool.
And so if he's the Shadow, the Black Mantis there would be our version of the spirit. And he's kind of like the friendly... Well, he's not really too friendly in the beginning of the book, but he's a friendly face of kind of superheroes, whereas the other one, we call him the Terror, you know, in the book, because there's no name for him. It's just this awful thing that happens to these villains, to these criminals, and it's just kind of go from there and, like, take from there. You know, you have your cop, you know, your beat cop that's kind of tired of walking the beat, but he's the Van Helsing of the piece. Lucy, as you can see, Lucy Murray, she's a kind of a play on Mina Murray and Lucy, her best friend. So I just put both of those names. She's like a kind of a flapper, debutante type. You know, she's a so definitely. You know, she's
it's a nice dress.
That's this guy right here. You know, and
just looking at my wife's closet.
And you know, the concept came kind of easy, and I just said, you know, after Babe Ruth came out, I wanted to work with Andres Moore. So I gave him the idea, and he ran with it. You know, like that's about the easiest sell ever. You know, like that, right there, I couldn't have been.
Yeah, he told me Dracula and gangsters in 1930s. So I was like, well, That's sold. Yeah, sold. Nice.
And how are you guys releasing this? What's the plan?
We're kind of doing like a pitch to a couple of publishers right now, so it's a wait and see. Hopefully, cross your fingers. Yeah. Good to see it soon.
A lot of publishers in the house tonight.
But so, yeah, it's very much in its early stages.
It's just getting kind of crafted right now. But I decided to go ahead and go with it because after doing like 120 page, like young adult graphic novel, I was like looking for something different. This involves a little two like fist cuffs and you know kind of stuff.
And the funny thing is, he wants to do a 200 page graphic novel.
Wow.
And it's like, wait, you went from 120, you complained about 120, you had to do it in 5 months, and he wants to do a 200 page graphic novel. And I looked at him and I said, all right, I'm in. I love being challenged.
Well, the guy that got me the Babe Ruth job, he's actually a literary agent, and so he's connected in like places like Scholastic, Random House, you know, Simon Schuster. So he's not your traditional. He's gonna pitch something to like IDW or something. So he's always looking for a story that's like, you know, like already in a big volume, kind of 200 pages, and that's. And recently, like publishers like Random House have been trying to pick up stuff like that, and they're actually kind of competing with. You know, DC and Marvel in ways. They're starting to pick up like crime stories and things like that. So I found it kind of interesting that why not make the whole story, you know, pitch it as like a huge, you know, not like a serialized thing, you know.
Very cool. Great. So Pat, let's chat with you a little bit. Hello. So Pat, you used to be a circus clown.
I'm still a circus clown.
Still a circus clown.
I went to Ringling Clown College with your wife, Marnie.
Oh,
beautiful. This is really intimate.
What?
Wow.
Since when?
No, it's true.
It all comes out now.
And, you know, as a clown, you're on the road for a while, riding it.
Yep, I was on the road with Ringling for part of the season. Left, took a job in Atlantic City with the circus, stayed there for the rest of the season. And since then, every season, I've either taken a huge step forward or a huge step back.
Nice.
And, you know, but in between, there's been, like, a lot of really great stuff. Because there was one show that I left, and the producer literally tells me, you know, when he finds out I'm not going to resign for the next season, if I had a dime for every clown who thought he was going to leave here and go to New York and make something of himself, I'll be back next season. I'm like, no, I won't. Literally, 2 weeks later, I booked a national commercial. I was remember the Visa Buddy commercial where the guy goes and buys bunnies for his daughter, they multiply all over the country?
Yeah,
that's right. I took 3 years of, like, because if anybody has the chance, be in a commercial. Be in a national commercial.
Oh, that's a great idea.
If somebody walks up to you,
real great to hear that, man.
Would you like to be in a commercial? You say absolutely, because I had a part-time job. I was a clown part-time, and a part-time job cashing checks that showed up my mailbox magically. So that was
you're making me feel like a real clown right now.
The greatest thing that ever happened to me. Next to my wife and my son.
They're not here tonight.
As a clown on the road and a comic book fan, was it hard to pick up comics on
Yes, it is virtually impossible to stay on top of the books you're reading because on Ringling it's a little easier because you're in big cities. And some of the Shrine shows, you're in big cities. And other shows, you are... It's places where you get out of the car and you look around and you go, I never, ever thought there would be a reason for me to be here. tours of Canada, where it's literally 500 miles between towns, and their perception of a town is really, you know, 8 igloos together. So, there's caribou, and it's like northern exposure type thing. And you start to get really excited to see like a Borders or a Barnes & Noble, because you're like, okay, I can get a month-old something. You know, like you get this real intense comic book Jones, and you're trying to keep up with things online. You know, it's virtually impossible when you're touring like that to stay on top of things. And then sometimes I leave the country, and it's great because you know you go to China and you spend a month in China. But when you start to get that Jones, there is nothing. There's no American comic books at all in China.
Are there
Chinese comic books, and they don't have superheroes.
Oh, what? No. What are they about? Like Babe Ruth?
Wow! These magical men who hit sticks. They've got heroes, but you can only sort of guess at what's going on. And like Chinese is not one of those languages you can sort of pick up a couple words. Oh, Nabisco cookie symbol and television antenna. Probably get thumb through it. And it's not like you're going to get any of the story from the pictures because I thought, oh, this beautiful artwork, and I'll look through it, and I'll get the, I have no idea if they read left to right or right to left, like, from their comics. You just, I have no
cultural
idea.
Immersion there.
It could have been a story about a guy who started off happy and ended up a lonely child, or, you know, I'm not sure.
Benjamin Button.
So what's your clown skills? Like, what's your specialty? Like, if I was to
specialty?
You do this check cashing thing, right?
That's the check cashing thing is that was a
it's
bit
a real fun party trick.
I'm trying to specialize in some of the lost things about clown history, because it really does go back in every culture in the world. You know, every single culture has some version of a physical comedian, and when you look at early cinema, like the very first joke in a movie is a guy looking at a garden hose. You know, kid steps off it, guy gets squirted in the face. And, you know, that's a form of clowning. It's physical, visual comedy. So, you know, you find it in all Native American tribes. You find it all over the world in every, you know, every culture. Even, like, strange indigenous, you know, people in the, you know, the remote parts of South America.
Canadian.
They find, parts of Canada where there's caribou. They find very funny caribou that everyone's attracted. You got to see this caribou. Yeah. This guy's good. But it, just in the modern era, just since the advent of, like, grease paint clowning. There are things that carry through all the way through music hall and burlesque and vaudeville and one single ring European clowning and silent film, vaudeville, you know, early talkies, things like that. You find the same things follow through all the time, and once you start to get in tune with it, you realize they're all over the place. The Abbott and Costello TV show was such a, just, it was like somebody threw open the door to a warehouse of old gags that go back to Commedia dell'arte, like 700 years of Italian comedy. It's the same stock company of, there's a landlord, there's a cop, there's two clowns, there's, you know, like the wacky people they meet on the street, there's, you know, like Stinky doesn't turn up in Commedia. Like, I'll give you such a pinch! You know? But that type of, like, you know, man-child character, these things turn up over and over and over again. The Seinfeld show. You know, it's Seinfeld. Yeah, I'm my own dad now. That Seinfeld show! The Seinfeld is funny. But you watch it, and it, the same ideas turn up over and over and over again, and you try to, like, make these threads and through lines. And I've got a blog called clownalley.net where I post videos all over the world, things that are happening now, things that, you know, early film that I find, just all this stuff. And people, I think everybody kind of knew it, but it was never all in the same place at the same time. And it wasn't something that everybody can contribute to the conversation before. So now I think it's much easier for people to look and see, oh my God, that silent film bit, you know, that's something that we were taught at Clown College, you know, like Dead and Alive. Dead and Alive turns up a lot in this stuff. Max Linder was a silent film comic who influenced Chaplin very heavily. And Bill Irwin, he's on Broadway and ready for Godot. Yes, Bill Irwin, very good comic. Yeah. One of my instructors at Clown College.
Oh.
So,
would you say that
he had pointed out that Dead and Alive turns up in this Max Linder film. Loan me its DVD and you're watching it. You're, absolutely, it goes back forever.
Let me try again. Can you jump?
Okay. So clown history is the thing that I'm really, like, I really sort. But juggling, well, we know he can read. Juggling is one of those things that I'm not real good at. There are people who are better at juggling than I am. But I'm always amazed at
let's do it! Juggle off!
It's a juggle off!
Alright, we have a juggle off.
I think we will have the juggle off after our next section, which we're going to move on to. Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
It's a balloon animal time!
which we like to call balloon animal time! Actually, we like to call the stack. First issue we're going to talk about is Captain America 600. Which you may have missed because it actually came out on Monday this week.
What?
Monday?
It was just yesterday.
That's Pete actually missed that.
Why would you go to a comic shop on Monday?
Well, the funny thing is, I don't know if anybody realized, but it was the day after Flag Day.
Gasps.
That's weird.
I got a Flag Day shirt!
I didn't even think of that, and I had a Flag Day party.
That is the closest I've heard to making sense out of this whole thing.
You work at Jim Halley's. Yep. What was, you know, Marvel expected a large response to this. you know, they said there's going to be widespread media coverage. They recommended overbuying issues of this.
Right.
Classic recommendation.
Yeah. They were like, you guys got to buy hundreds of thousands of copies.
You don't have enough copies or something like that.
Yeah. So how'd that work out for you?
Well, it would have worked out great if the book that came out yesterday was Captain America Reborn.
Yeah.
Which, in the article that was in the Daily News that spoiled it for everybody, it said 5-issue miniseries, and I had a couple of people come in yesterday asking, so is this the first part of the 5-part miniseries? And the best thing we could say, it's issue 0 of 5,
oh,
you
that's
know?
That's nice of you to
so,
say that.
Yeah, it's nice of us, but yeah, it's the best way to let somebody know that it's not this book that you're looking for, unfortunately, but please buy it.
it does set it up in a really...
No, yeah, it's a great story. I think the best part of that book isn't even the in continuity Brubaker stuff. It's the Roger Stern, Bernie Rosenthal from the 80s story that happened to me. It was a great story. It's a character that I had affinity for because that's when I started reading Captain America. And then to have Sterno do it, he was, he was one of the original guys, you know, so it's like, you know, yeah, this is the guy that I read when I started reading Captain America. This is the story that I probably would have wanted had I, you know, stopped reading when Roger got off the book, you know, so... It was really good. And the Brubaker stuff is great, too. So.
Yeah, it's a great package. The whole thing is a really good issue.
Yeah.
It just feels like it was lessened a little bit because of how Marvel marketed it, which is unfair, I think, right?
Well, plus it's ridiculous. Like, they're asking so hard for media coverage, like, they're just not going to get it. There's nothing so crazy in this issue that would warrant people being like, so Captain America might come back? Like,
Well, the best part about the books is the MacGuffin, you know, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody, but the there's a kind of an item in the book that
you can say it. They've all.
The gun that shot Captain America has been missing ever since it was shot. So
got shot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, no.
Captain America was killed.
Captain America is a superhero.
He's like Babe Ruth, but without a bat.
But yeah, so that the whole idea of the MacGuffin actually being something real.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if there's any film students or anybody that's, but you know, the idea that there's something that exists that we hadn't even thought of, you know, at this point. Brubaker knows mystery really well. He knows crime.
Yeah. He's
obviously, I mean, Criminal is one of the best books out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And he knows what he's doing when it comes to story structure. And you can tell he's had this idea probably since the first day he was called by Marvel.
So it's good. Pick it up, right?
It's definitely, you get a lot for your money. It's an extra dollar, but it's working.
What I think is so crazy is, like, there's that classic MacGuffin with the gun, but then there's this... it's a magic gun.
If you hold your nose to this...
You actually see the gun.
You see the
gun. There's a cover gallery of every 600, all 600 issues. But if you pull it back really far, you see somebody going like this. It's Joe Quesada.
His unborn child is in the audience.
Oh, I'm sorry. This. Wow. It's in England.
Yeah, that'll do it. This kid's not going to speak.
Hello.
He probably will.
The only reason to have a child, to be honest, is so they can sweep your flu. Right?
True.
Or shag your shoes for a nickel.
Now, pay him more than that. These are the days. I think it's crazy that they have the Heroes Reborn female Bucky, like, in there along with this, like, this very classic story to have this, like, total curveball.
Yeah.
It's pretty weird.
It's a great issue. Pick it up. Good value.
Yep.
The end. Goodbye.
All right.
Next thing we're going to talk about is Sherlock Holmes, number 2, which, for me, is a big surprise. I'm really, really enjoying the series a lot. It really feels like a classic Sherlock Holmes tale. You have a problem with it.
I don't know. It's just like, you get it. He knows a lot of stuff. He's going to figure it out. That's the thing. Yeah, sorry.
Spoiler, come on.
It's
issue 2.
Yeah, I know. God, will they take the character?
Isn't it funny that Sherlock Holmes is a character that we will say, you know, like, no crap Sherlock? As if, like,
you can say shit on the show.
No, you said there was a kid.
Unborn child.
She's got a finger in her belly button. but
is that how that works?
It's like
science on that.
It's like if they put out a book called The Titanic. You know, it's like, I guess this thing's going down.
It's really well done though. The art is great. The writing is great. It's a fun mystery. Basically, it's a locker room mystery, except Sherlock Holmes is the suspect, which I think is a cool twist, and I don't think I've seen that in a Sherlock Holmes tale before. So
yeah, I know.
What is your problem? Gonna,
the only interesting part was they're like, oh, don't you think it's weird that Sherlock Holmes' villain is this guy Moriarty that we've never seen, but is just as smart as him, but evil? But then they're like, well, he's going to show up eventually.
Yeah, I know. It's a Sherlock Holmes tale.
Yeah, I know. So why do you care about it? It's so worthy.
Oh,
this candlelight.
Oh, what is your favorite to Pete?
You think that's funny?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I hope not.
What, Pete, would you say pick it up?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Awesome.
No. That's
what?
Not a Captain America.
Is this
spoiler?
The Captain America spoiler?
No.
No, that's the boys.
Hey, he peed himself back to life.
I saw that. That was great.
Let's move on and talk about The Veil, number one. Pete is a big fan of this issue. You want to talk about it a little bit?
Thank you, Luke, man. IDW is putting out an amazing comic with this. The art is fantastic. Some great storytelling. It's not all superhero-y. It's really well done. I just wanted to talk about this comic because I wanted to recommend it to people to check out. It's just fantastic. It's a great story. It pulls you into a fun little world with this lady who can kind of maybe see ghosts. We don't know yet. But
you're just looking over there for ghosts now.
No.
But,
but yeah.
Oh, go ahead. Whether she sees ghosts or not, is that still a question? I mean, because
no,
I think she sees ghosts.
Yeah. She's hanging out with a ghost.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's issue number one.
What's the difference between this and like the Bruce Willis movie, besides him being a psychologist and her being...
Well, that's a movie. This is a comic book. There's a lot. I mean, people
yeah,
have want to get into
this
it.
This
okay.
Have you been reading Wade's Unknown?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
See, I like that a lot more than I like this, mm-hmm. only because there's something about... I like the idea of, like, she's a cop, and the other one is just...
She's a private investigator. She's not a cop.
Okay.
Jeez.
Wow. It changes it. I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah!
Really
but,
won everybody over with that.
But the unknown, I think, is like the premise of it, of a woman that's dying, but she knows everything. She can solve any mystery and stuff. But there's only one thing that she can't solve, and it's why she's sick.
Aww.
You know, like, you know, why she's not. I think, oh, well, I like the premise. F you.
No, I agree. I like this. This is well done. The art is good throughout, but it does feel like The Sixth Sense. It feels like stuff we've read before. There's not a knock against it. You know, like, go to a different place at some point, but right now it's a wait and see for me.
Nice. Yeah, I like it.
Cool. This one I'm talking about, X-Men Forever, number one. I don't know if you guys know about this issue, but basically back in the 90s, Chris Claremont and Jim Lee worked together on X-Men, wrote issue 1, 2, and 3, and then Chris Claremont essentially ended his run that he'd done for, what, 16 years, something like that?
I don't know, he ended it. It was ended.
It was ended. This is Chris Claremont years later, two decades later almost, a decade later, going back and continuing his story as if this was X-Men number 4.
Right.
So what did you guys think about this?
The nostalgia factor is huge in this book. It really brings you back to the old school kind of X-Men feel. And that alone, it just is very enjoyable to read and to feel. So it was. I'm like excited about where it could go. I thought the first page was fantastic. Logan and Jean Grey making out. And so I'm excited to see where this goes. I hope it doesn't suck, but right now I'm feeling good about it.
I'm with you on the nostalgia thing. I saw when you see Cyclops wearing his weird belt, I was like, something stirred in my
head.
I was like, oh, that is how he's supposed to look.
Have you seen those commercials for Dave and Buster's where it's like they have this little fun?
Yeah.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
That's exactly what, because I wanted to hate this book.
Yeah.
Bad.
Totally.
Hate it. I wanted to, you know, just like grind it to the ground. There was an issue of Outsiders that Judd Winnick wrote, and it was the issue where it was revealed that two of the characters were lovers and gay, and I was literally, I was on register at Hanley's, and I threw the thing across, threw it across the room, three pages flew out, put $3 on the counter and just said, I don't give a shit, this is the worst piece of crap ever. It's the most contrived thing, and it's exactly what I was expecting of this. And yet, I didn't get that. Like, and it wasn't even a nostalgic. I don't.
Were you all ready to throw it? You were like, oh,
next
page.
No, I didn't want to even read it. I don't get nostalgic like that. I loved the books back then when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But they came and went. I read Claremont's second run on X-Men, and it sucked.
Yeah.
It was wordy. It was pretentious. It was just terrible. I read this, and I just thought, wow, if if you would have taken a time capsule and really, you know, changed everything around, this would have been the book that came. And if Marvel was smart, they would have called it X-Men 4. They don't have an X-Men adjective list title right now, so they should have just called it X-Men 4.
Well, he was in this.
And this is actually, this is my problem with it, is it does not feel like X-Men 4 to me. Just based on the idea of, like, okay, yeah, the first three issues, you know, they recently released the X-Men Forever Alpha, which re-released the first three issues. Very tight story with the Acolytes and Magneto and everything, fighting the X-Men. Okay, setting up the new teams, the blue and the gold teams. And then the beginning of this issue immediately is like, oh, hey, Kitty Pryde, what are you doing here? Thanks for coming back to the plane. Mm-hmm. And then the end of the issue, I'll just go ahead and spoil it. It's like, oh, my God, the Phoenix is back. And, oh, no, Wolverine is dead, which I feel like, never in a million years would they ever have done that in X-Men number 4. And that's my problem with it, is I feel like I love the idea of, like, hey, let's play on the nostalgia, let's go back to that, let's continue it the way it was. But it feels like Claremont's like, let's change everybody's expectations of what it's supposed to be, and instead go entirely against them and kill Wolverine, the most popular character ever.
Yeah, it's
because that'll sell.
It's
copies.
Impossible to not think that he's taking some kind of a lesson from the years that have passed. It's impossible to think that. But it's nice to kind of fall into that for like 2 seconds.
Sure.
Because it's enjoyable. It's not the greatest book in the world. It wasn't the best X-Men book that came out last week, but it was fun. You know, I enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. And cool. It comes out every 2 weeks. Oh, yeah. He was on the show a couple weeks ago, Chris Claremont, and he was like, yeah, they wanted to come out bi-weekly to get me through my contract real fast. I was like, wow. Tough to know that as you're working on the book that they're trying to buy it. Essentially. But, keep reading.
He's on at least until issue 3, so that's good. X-Factor number 44. Justin, you're a big fan of this title. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, I love this. I don't know. Yeah. I keep saying I like it. You guys are all weirded out because...
Why are we weirded out?
I'm happy to tell you. So, Jamie Madrox met this girl when he was a kid. Or when she was a kid.
Yeah,
and,
he was normal age.
Normal age?
Not normal age, but he was of the age he is now. And she was, how old was she?
I don't know, like 12.
She was 12.
So
is
then
that,
he...
Is that Layla Miller?
Yeah, okay. Layla Miller. Then, They went
he
to the
He fell
future.
In love with a 12-year-old.
No, he didn't.
It's crazy.
Just wait a second.
It's
Let me fucking finish.
Whoa.
Let him finish. Let
him not 12 anymore.
Honey, they look like that at 12 these days. Just
go ahead. That's the girlfriend. That's not her, by the way. Yeah. That's false advertisement. That's not her.
Yeah. To defend Justin, she was 12. The last time he saw her, she was 12. And then, like, 2 days later, she was older, and then he had sex with her. Which I think is like totally
just Jerry Lee Lewis's defense.
She wasn't his cousin.
I have to propose something here.
Don't have sex with 12-year-olds?
No. I don't read the book. It comes highly recommended, but I like reading it in trades.
Yeah.
So just because I like, you know, getting it all. Is it possible? And I'm not trying to cast aspersions, but is that wish fulfillment on anyone's part like that?
Peter David.
I wish this 12-year-old were of age so I could have sex with her. You know, I'm not... I mean...
that's offensive. Yeah, there are tons of cops right outside the door. Careful what you're reading.
I'm just wondering, and again, like, Peter David's written plenty of stuff. Like, he still writes stuff that's, you know, entertaining and great to read.
Fantastic, yeah.
But I just, like, just the concept of it just kind of... Red flag.
Yeah, you're allowed to be creeped out by that.
Good. That's all
I know. Yeah. Well, be creeped out. I don't know. He didn't create the character, but he used the character, and he had this plan, I think, from the very beginning. So
well, yeah, because in one of the first
books. So he had a plan for a 12-year-old.
Yeah. Well, doesn't she tell him, like, in the first book, like the very first issue, you and I are going to.
You're going to get married.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It's a good book. And I think their I like their relationship. I like the way that they set it up. Peter David set it up in the beginning. And
how are things going with your girlfriend, by the way? Oh, I mean, she's on break now, right? From high school.
You're weird. You're the weird one.
Here. Oh, I'm the weird one.
You're the one that keeps saying.
I'm so uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, I know.
Pick up this book. It's great. Not. All right, let's move on to talk about Frank Castle, the Punisher, Max. Number 71. Pete, you're a big fan of The Punisher. Want to talk about this a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you guys ever been to the Bayou, but apparently don't ever go there. Punishers find out the hard way that crocodiles eat people and naughty girls don't wear shoes.
I don't know, the Punisher didn't do much in this issue. He's driving a Lexus around New Orleans.
Hey,
around,
he's a Punisher. He deserves it.
He's driving like a lime green comfort. Lexus. He's driving a lime green Lexus, which I think is
I can't cute. Think of anything more punishing.
He's driving around and he's like, oh, some teenagers having fun. This is going to be trouble. And then he pulls into a gas station and he's talking to some weird barefoot woman who stepped on, she says, I just stepped on a human tooth. And Punisher's like, cool, lady.
This is my biggest problem with this issue.
What is your biggest problem?
My biggest problem with this issue is, okay, so there's these backwoods people that are kidnapping teenagers and feeding them to crocodiles, and the entire issue, the Punisher is like, something's going on.
Well, he doesn't know that. We know that, but the Punisher doesn't know that.
Nobody's like, she steps on a human tooth, and he's like, maybe that means something.
Yeah. And then it cuts away, he's like, I wonder what's going on in the house, and you see the house, and there's these like backwoods people eating people, and you're like, we're gonna fucking eat you next. And then it cuts back to the Punisher, he's like, well, I better get going. Unless, and then that's where the issue went. Like, unless, so I don't know.
It was good. I really liked it. I think that...
The art is fantastic, first of all.
Oh, yeah. Gordon Parlow is one of the best Punisher artists in the modern Max era, I guess. You know?
Wow, that's very specific cover.
No, yeah, no. I mean, well, Steve Dillon, kind of the quintessential one, but... But Goran Parlov, like, he drew the Barracuda. You know, and that's one of the best stories since the Slavers, I guess, come out. But this one, it's funny because the last three were all mystery writers. You know, I'm not sure who Victor Gishler is, but I'm pretty sure he's a mystery writer.
Gotta love Gishler.
But here's the thing. Yes, Frank does nothing in this issue, but don't you feel like he's going to uncoil at some point and
punish somebody?
Yes. I always think he's going to shoot.
But then at the very end, there's like a Zed-type character from Pulp Fiction that just pops up, and it's like, oh, we just see this shadow of somebody, and he's just ready to... This guy's going to eat you. You know, like, they're cooking somebody up in the back. One guy just got eaten by an alligator, and there are these two girls, one with a black eye, and this big, huge shadow looming over them. It's like, oh, shit. Something's going
to
happen.
If this turns out... I will actually like this if it turns out to be like a 5-issue arc and every single issue the Punisher's like,
gotta keep driving.
Just think of like...
He's almost got his hand on the doorknob and then, call for you, Punisher.
Oh, hello?
Gotta get this Lexus back to
the It's not his Lexus. It's obvious it's not his Lexus.
No,
I'm green. How is it obvious that it's not his Lexus?
Because, well,
does it have a
skull
guy
in it?
Yeah. It's green?
There's no skull on it. It's not
the
black.
The license plate is not Funisher.
Yeah. So, he must have a lot of stencils.
The license plate says Funisher.
Yeah.
That's how you
know. I need to borrow your car, Funisher. Oh, fine. Have it back by midnight. Now that's my kind of character.
All right, let's move on. Last but not least, talk about The Flash Rebirth number 3.
Rebirth
You're
again.
A big...
you big love this issue.
I love this issue.
Oh,
we get
man.
A Flash-Superman race.
You know what's great about this issue? It's just running. Just running. A whole time. Ah! I'm The Flash! I just gotta keep running.
That's what he does.
Wouldn't it be great if there was an issue... where he just didn't run, he just went to bio.
Yeah, right.
He thought he was going to run, but he didn't. Like, some girl steps on a tooth.
What do you want to have him doing?
See, he steps on a tooth.
Yeah, I do. I want him just thinking. I just
But here's the thing. Like, it's a fantastic issue, don't get me wrong. There is a lot of running. Why at the same time, why does everybody have a problem with Aquaman if he's just always swimming?
Yeah, I know.
It's the same. That's why I don't get, like, you know, the criticisms of stuff like that. I mean, if the Flash isn't running, then why is he there?
Walker, Texas Ranger?
But you can understand why there is a Flash.
You can understand why there is a Flash, because running fast is very helpful.
Certainly.
But if you're choosing super friends to have, like if you're Superman, you don't really need any friends. You're just having friends so you don't look like a jerk. What do you want to be friends with? Batman. He's got money. Robin comes along with Batman. Now you've got two friends. Wonder Woman. So you don't look gay because Robin's wearing shorts. That's the crux of who you need. This Everybody else is ancillary.
You thought of this in Canada. In a long car trip. This is when you put this together.
Green Lantern is a useful guy to have. The Flash is a useful guy to have. But they're both variations on things Superman can do just as well by himself.
True.
Wow.
But Aquaman is only the... Like, how do you even propose to join. If you're Aquaman, hey guys, can I hang out? Well, what do you do? I swim. He talks really cool.
The world is mostly water.
Nobody ever robs it.
Well,
I steal some
pirates, baby.
Pirates
are career for robbing the water. That's all pirates do.
Well, Somali pirates, but that's come up once in like how long?
Well, Aquaman's
dead. You would constantly be in charge of beer and chips. You would never ever get anyone in the sun if you were Aquaman.
You at least be in charge of drinks.
Yeah.
But if you guys say pick up this issue, I think we've talked about it.
I think we're ready for an Aquaman rebirth.
Yes, Aquaman. And then, as if Aquaman wasn't useless enough, for a while he had one hand.
Yeah.
Which is even less of an Aquaman. Yeah. And he's got a utility belt, which makes no sense.
He doesn't
need anything.
Well, if you have
paper clips and gum and bus tokens.
If you're in the ocean, you flip it up and it'd be like, whoop.
So you got that extra second. It won't hit the floor. Yes.
I love Aquaman.
So do I. I can't
you love Aquaman and
explain
Flash.
Why. It's like an abortion argument.
Those two have never gone together.
Hear me out. Comes out on one side or the other. And see, with Aquaman, you either hate him or you love him.
And sometimes you shoot a guy in a church about it.
Something happened on that trip to Canada.
That's it for the stack! Yeah! All right. Our next segment is my favorite segment because you guys make us up into your audience questions. For that, we're going to bring up Booth Man.
Curmudgeon-y Booth Man.
Yeah, we have amazing prize packs for whoever asks questions. Let's get the first question.
Same. Hey, guys. Weird show. I don't know who this is for. Are all clowns sad or just misunderstood?
Jocelyn?
Yes. Yes, they are.
Two both.
I would say most of them are misunderstood, and for a really good reason. A lot of people are afraid of clowns, and I know them, and that's good. That's probably good.
Get out of here.
You know what that guy's gonna do.
All right.
Richard, after we ask that, he's gonna bring you some prizes.
Yeah.
Nice.
Look at this prize back there.
Thank you so much.
Let's get the next question.
Yes.
What would the Babe have thought about the Mega Millions ball players make today?
You take that.
Thanks.
Justin.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, he would have thought about what you were saying.
I gave my answer.
Oh. I stand.
Based on your research.
I don't think he would think too badly upon them because he played to the fullest, you know. And I think this is my opinion, I think, but like, I think
his actions were, they caused a lot of controversy in his career, but he was never really, he never rubbed anybody the wrong way, like, with his comments or anything. So I don't think he'd have anything bad to say about anybody.
I think the biggest problem is that he would be one of his players.
Yeah,
you know,
he made the most.
Yeah,
he did make a lot of money, and he got a lot of endorsements.
Yeah,
got a candy bar.
Yep.
Yeah.
Different favorite.
I don't what?
Who's Babe Ruth?
Babe. Oh, in your face! In your face! Thank right, you for
I'm
the
sorry.
Correction.
Next thing you're telling me is Mr. Butterfinger was a baseball player. Cool. Raise your hand if you asked that question. Let's go. Next question.
Hope you're not sharing.
Mr. Butterfinger. All right. This is for everyone.
Oops, I dropped the baseball.
Whenever you're ready.
Thank you.
We're working on some characters. One character.
Yeah, we have a show after this. It's a show. It's not a big deal. I think we're going to get a couple of commercials. Gone.
Can a vibrating sex toy be used to travel a distance between Earth 1 and Earth 2?
Are you kidding me? That's what you chose as the question. You had all the questions to choose from.
You want to switch places?
Oh! Finally.
No. Yes.
Well, technically, in the Flash Rebirth, they talk about the vibrational plane, and it's all about that it is vibrational to get through the other dimension. So if it had enough battery,
would it be fast enough?
But if it were, would it just be the
if it were
half?
Used by the Flash?
Like,
yeah,
the Flash
yeah,
augmented.
Like Flash used by
he could send the Huntress back.
Okay, let's move on to the next one.
Cool.
Who asked?
Yeah, who wants a prize?
Who asked? I raise my hand.
Yeah,
I
They get the ultimate prize.
Yes, they do. Yeah. Yeah. Tell them what they won. Pete.
They won the White Album in comic book form.
And that's it for your audience questions. Goodbye, Blues Band. Guys, it is time for your next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah. Yes!
Hooray!
Yes!
Yeah.
First thing we're going to talk about, this is a little thing that came out today, actually. Robert Kirkman, who writes Invincible, sent out a press release promoting Invincible 63, which comes out tomorrow. The title of the press release was "New Issue of Invincible to Be Super Popular and Beloved for Vague Cryptic Reasons." Something might be happening in Invincible 63, and whatever it is will quite possibly be rather amazing.
Wow.
So clearly he's making fun of the stuff that was going on with Captain America 600, where Marvel was saying, you've got to get this issue, overbuy this issue, we're not going to tell you what happens, but you've bought too few of them. And stuff that's happening a lot of comics where they're telling... The publishers are saying less and less so that hopefully people buy more and more. Do you think this is out of control? Is this something that they need to scale back? Or do you think it actually, honestly, makes fans more excited?
Well, I think in this case it's funny. That, you know, that
making
he's
making fun of
it. Thank you. Yeah. And I, you know, poking fun at the thing. But I think they do what's getting out of hand is a lot of the variant covers and all that kind of stuff. Like, you know, I fall victim to that a lot. And it's like... sometimes you end up buying the same comic just because it's a different cover and you think it might be a different, you know, comic. But I do think it gets a little crazy with all the different hype machines and all the different, you know, other things that you buy, but you're really buying.
Well, the argument against that is that with an image book, it's creator owned, and it's hard to compete as somebody that works, you know, on his own stuff. It's hard to get the word out on your own stuff.
Right.
Image is a little bit better about it than, say, doing a book with Ape Entertainment, because there's a lot more footwork. But with the Image, you know, they have a better spot in the previous catalog. It's a little bit easier to see their stuff. A lot of retailers admit to not going past Wizard in the previous catalog. And there's a ton of books that are great and are getting ignored by a lot of the stores out there. So I think I bought them for that, because any way you can get an Image, not Image, but Invincible, isn't selling numbers that Spider-Man is. So any way that you can get any kind of attention on it, I commend. Because it's tough. You know, it's not... He's a partner at Image, sure, he's going to get money, you know, from being one of the partners, but it's the satisfaction of having a lot of people read your book is a lot greater than the money that you get.
Yeah.
So.
Well, he's funny, though. I mean, he just had this big crossover thing where that he was promoting and kind of... He wasn't being as cryptic as Marvel was with this, but he was doing the same thing. So, like, it's fine to poke fun at that, but he still does the same thing. And yeah, I think it's ridiculous of Marvel to be like, you gotta get this, and we won't tell you a thing about it.
Well, there's, like, they released their solicitations today, and half of the things were like, to be announced, which I feel like is slightly unhelpful, because as a fan, I want to be like, cool, I want to find out what's going to happen so I can get excited about it.
I actually like it better when the solicitations have kind of less information in them, because you just know kind of where that the arc is continuing or where it's going a little bit. But you don't know, like, then the story is allowed to unfold as the writer intends.
Yeah, that's fair.
A little bit.
But I do think this is at least, it's a response to the press release right here. That's what I'm going to do. This table is a response to our... this is a response to the fact that it feels somewhat like everybody is just shouting in a crowded room is essentially what's going on.
Yeah.
At which point it just evens out to you can't hear anything.
I think to a certain extent it's this ridiculous cycle of death and rebirth over the last like 10 or 15 years where this one dies, that one, and everything has to be hyped, and it's not considered to be enough of a success unless it's the death of Superman, which, you know, just happened to hit on a really slow news day.
Yeah.
You know, that would not have been anything. The death of Robin was barely noticed. Superman's dead. Batman's... what is he then? I stopped reading because they... oh, we're going to kill Bruce Wayne. Oh, please, forget it. I'm done. A 5-year moratorium on killing characters or anybody who's already dead right now 5 years before you're allowed to bring them back.
Who's going to do? Police are going to be...
this whole... You knew when Steve Rogers got shot.
Yeah, but back. I mean, that's what...
You know,
in Greek mythology,
Bruce
killed...
Wayne.
Oh,
Bruce... Bruce Wayne.
Zeus is a bull today. Okay, hold on with it.
Yeah, I know that. It sounds absolutely ridiculous when you apply it to comic books. Where you, oh, he can shoot laser beams out of his eyes.
Zeus turned into a bull and fucked a woman. Made another god.
That was the issue. I dropped it.
Spoiler. But for 5 years, just. Find something else to do.
That's
find
impossible.
Some other yeah. way to sell a book. Because you sold books for years before that.
Yeah, but you also didn't have a catalog that told you what was coming out 2 months in advance. You also went on the idea that comics were a monthly industry, that you had to wait a month to find out what if this guy was going to be dead or alive. Mm. Nowadays, everyone's a little bit more spoiled, and when those things to be determined or you redacted because of S.H.I.E.L.D. or whatever, you know, like on Marvel solicits. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really bother me that much. But when the hype behind it is, oh, guys, you really got to get this book. You know, people are going to be looking for this for months. That's when it gets a little ridiculous. I don't care if it doesn't.
Yeah, the book before that should have been so good. You're going
to
buy that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. They're trying to get like newspaper headlines. It's like they covered death of Captain America. They're probably not going to come back for the question mark.
Question mark of Captain America. When he actually does turn up, I think everybody will pay attention.
Sure.
But it's that dead, born, or gay.
Oof.
And everything's been through the
Oof.
Dead, born, or gay cycle recently. You know,
wow.
Batwoman's back, and she's gay. You know, okay, so. And I suppose it's a bigger deal, you know, outside the New York area. Or I don't know. Maybe there's somebody in Ohio going, gay Batwoman? No way. That's not my Batwoman.
But they're going to look.
Yeah.
Is she kissing a girl? Because I might have to check that out.
That's a big question mark. This is the book you got to buy.
You guys want to go to the comic book store, right? Leave the Bayou behind?
You almost want to be spinning a wheel, and it comes up with a superhero, and it comes up with dead, reborn, or gay on the other wheel. Just two wheels at the same time.
But
I haven't seen Aquaman
dies, comes back as two gay women.
You know what? There's only two companies.
You guys are in Gay Avengers, right?
Yeah.
It's good.
I read that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a weird discussion. Let's move on. Next thing we're going to talk about is there was a picture released of Mickey Rourke in Iron Man 2 as Whiplash. Bring down the lights a little bit just so people can see it in case they haven't.
He's still ugly.
The cool thing about this is...
No, that's what keeps him young. That's from his house.
Yeah.
That's it.
Literally, this is some basic story because he was actually homeless for years before they put him on this movie set. So...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Sorry,
I've been working on that for weeks. What do you guys think about this costume? What do you think about this Mickey Rourke as Whiplash?
That's going to leave a lot of chafing.
I am glad Mickey Rourke is back because he's a really talented actor and deserved to have been like better recognized over the last 15, 20 years.
Yeah.
What?
But he took his head off and replaced it with a ventriloquist dummy head. Mm-hmm. You don't get to be famous anymore. You're gonna, you know, like Sin City was about as good as I think he's going to be in a movie.
No,
because
the wrestler.
Well, the wrestler, but that's another role where like you're not allowed to have a regular head. Like it's going to be really tough to believe him as anything other than like a role where he's supposed to have a head made out of silly putty.
Well, that's why a supervillain's a good choice, you know.
Well, his choice is a strong word.
Here's the problem with it. That's not recognizable as Whiplash. I saw a picture of
Whiplash.
He's a guy who gets rear-ended by a lime green car driven by a
car. The only problem that I have with that costume, though, is that, and this is going to sound like really nerdy, that's an arc reactor from the first movie on his chest.
Yeah.
So I can kind of figure out how he got it. So it's kind of giving me a little bit of a spoiler before I even see the movie.
Right.
I trust Favreau, though, that it's going to be entertaining. I love that first movie.
Yeah.
I can't really, you know, complain too much. But doesn't it look like he's at a race?
Yeah.
He is, actually.
Yeah.
I don't
think
a lot of people want to.
Go ahead.
Well, it's the Monaco Grand Prix he's at.
Doesn't look happy.
Unclear. We don't know anything.
Why
would you rob that?
He
would be happy to be at a race.
Yeah, I certainly.
I think my biggest problem also with that costume is that, as a fan of comic books, as a fan of superheroes and supervillains, there's no big stupid green thing.
Wasn't he in purple?
And the problem is, I think the Hollywood. Or the actors, I don't know, don't want their faces
why couldn't Iron Man be in that mask the entire movie? He had to take it off right at the end and right.
Robert Downey Jr.'s got a pretty face.
He's
damn right.
Well, it's like all the Spider-Man movies. They
yeah. 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 Anytime he has an act, he takes his mask off.
Only my mask is on fire.
The only. I believe that didn't happen in Dark Knight.
Yes.
I believe that Christian Bale had the Batman mask when he was Batman the entire time.
Well, Christian Bale was like, I got this in the voice.
Even if Batman Returns, he inexplicably tears his mask off for no really good reason at the end. Like, don't you just take that off? You don't rip those off every
they're
night.
They're parts of the same pee. They're split. Or what do you say? Like some stupid Michael.
Well, when they made Captain America, when they made the Captain America movie, their first thought was, how do we get him out of that suit? We have to spend as little time as possible in that suit. Otherwise, this movie's just going to be ridiculous.
But
like, well, maybe you shouldn't be making Captain America.
Yeah, it's the coolest part of it. That's why Sin City worked, because they all look like the characters. Yeah. But, you know, it was an Iron Man armor that was functional, at least according to Hollywood magic. And it looked great, you know.
Yeah.
That's why...
Well, I think
put the mask on. You know, Quesada's argument about Bullseye not wearing white booties because it's he looks, I think he said it looked gay, but I can't remember. I don't want to misquote him. But he said it looked stupid or something, you know, like, let's just say that for the sake of argument. I don't care. I want to see Bullseye with the stupid mask with the dumb Bullseye in his head. Because that's Bullseye. That's what I mean, if you're going to put Daredevil in a red costume, put Bullseye in the black and white. That's, you know, and he should be in the stupid purple green ponytail.
And it's guilty.
That reminds me
guilty
of that movie or the comics Wanted. not Wanted. Kick-Ass.
Yeah.
Where the kid makes his own costume and it's supposed to be cheap, and then now there's a film that's going to come out.
Yeah.
So it's his homemade costume finally, as opposed to the Spider-Man one that it looks like it was, you know, made.
Nice.
Like,
made by Hollywood.
Yeah.
Blockbusters.
But then they changed it and they opened his mouth up all. Right? In the comic book, he had his mouth is covered. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but even in that movie where it's supposed to be.
I mean, how many nits can we pick?
But I'm just saying.
It's virtually,
you know,
unlimited amount.
I'm willing to give this the benefit of the doubt, because the first pictures of Heath Ledger I thought looked awful. And the second pictures looked awful, and the third pictures looked awful. I couldn't have hated that.
How are the fourth pictures?
Yeah.
But the fourth picture was great. Claremont came back for that one. No, but once you see the entire thing, you get the sense, oh, okay, this works, and it works really, really well.
Yeah.
But that first picture, judging from that first picture, I'm like, why did somebody put clown makeup on somebody with bubblegum on their cheeks?
Yeah,
I'm just going to bring a little green ponytail and hold it up.
If you
like,
squint,
and try to move him around.
All you need is a My Little Pony.
You've thought about this perhaps in a long car ride.
Totally.
Great.
Guys, that's it for the Week in Geek. It's time for the next section of the trivia. And that will turn over to Pete LePage.
This is the part of the show where we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for coming. We appreciate it. It's a chance to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance to win $25? Simply raise your hand. Yes, you, brave soul. Come on down. Weird. I have an eye patch in my pocket. Okay. That's for you. Yeah. What's your name, sir?
I'm Dan.
Dan? Audience? Audience, Dan.
Hi,
Dan. Nice to meet you.
Better.
Okay, so... today's trivia is on Babe Ruth.
Oh.
So this is how it's going to work. You're going to listen to the question, listen to all three possible answers, choose the correct one, go 3 for 3, gift card yours. Okay?
Sweet.
All right. Thank you, Boothman. The Babe had many nicknames. Which one was not one of his nicknames? Was it A, the Great Bambino, B, the Sultan of SWAT, or C, George the Animal Steel?
I'll go with C.
C is correct! Yeah. 1 for 1. Here we go. Which position did
Babe... wait, Babe, George the Animal Steel? Ruth?
Hey, let's focus. All right, here we go. Which position did Babe Ruth not play? A, pitcher. B, first base. Or C, Zartan. G.I. Joe, the movie. Go see.
Got it. Okay, so I'll say C.
C is correct. Okay. Two for two. Don't get cocky. It's going to get rocky. Here we go.
What?
Babe Ruth had many hobbies. Including, is it A, golf, B, tennis, or C, Jumanji?
Oh, sweet.
So it's either A, golf, or B, tennis.
Or C, what?
It's definitely not C. Jumanji wasn't around
watch
back then.
Watch his face.
So it's either A, golf, or it's B, tennis.
And the question is?
Which one was Babe Ruth's hobby? What did he like doing?
Oh, it was A, golf.
It is correct! A, golf! There you go. Not only did you get a patch, you get $25 free.
All right. As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics or Jim Hadley's. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
I'm going to say Hellblazer. It's been an amazing run. So, yeah, check it out.
Gotta say, Captain Britain and the MI-13. Yes. Sadly, coming to a close soon, but pick it up while you can.
Nice. Dark Reign, Mr. Negative, number one is coming out, which is a title I never thought of a million years I'd like, but I actually read in advance of it, and it's really fun.
I'm going to pick that up when it gets to 600. Once it gets up there.
Cool. What are you looking forward to?
Is Ex Machina still there?
Yeah.
Well,
I'll probably pick that up again.
I have to go with either Incognito, which is another Brubaker book, after Captain America, or Streets of Gotham, because I think Manhunter should never been canceled.
And for both of you guys, plug your stuff. Plug where people can pick up Babe Ruth, and get your upcoming stuff.
At any fine bookstore or any great comic book store like Jim Hale's Universe, I think Midtown has it as well. What do you got coming up?
I got a book coming out either Random House or First Second. They're kind of battling out about my wife's childhood story. She's from China, and it talks about her growing up in late 70s, early 80s. It's a comic book. So it's gonna come out either place, First Second or Random House.
Oh, it's coming out.
Yeah, it's just look for it in bookstores and possibly some.
What's it called?
What's the title?
Right now, the running title is called Little White Duck. So look out for it.
I have a story coming out in Pop Gun 4 called The Golden Mantis of Chinatown, and it's basically kind of Saturday afternoon kung fu theater. It's an 8-page story. It's kind of an introductory story to a greater story that we want to tell, but you know, it should be enough to hook you guys. And then after that, hopefully, Fist of Dracula.
Awesome.
Sweet. Pat, what are you looking for?
I am looking forward to the JLA Trophy Room Back Cuffs prop replica for $125.
And plug something of yours.
I'll plug clownalley.net, which is my website, if you guys want to go and watch some videos of classic silent film comedy and live circus comedy. And I'll be on tour this fall. I've got a baby coming in September.
Hey, day for babies!
And I am dogging the trip to China at the beginning of October, because I'll be tied up with baby stuff. And after that, there's a tour with my show Cirque Idiotique, which is me and Andrew Scharf, normally. And Mark Gordon. And possibly.
Oh, you know Andrew.
Possibly. Yeah. You know Andrew. Andrew Sharp, Mark Gordon, and possibly next year, a big mystery guest star will join Cirque Idiotique. Will it be somebody important, or will it be Mark Moore's brother? You're going to have to buy it to find out.
I have to plug one more thing,
yes.
Because I totally. I'm spacing out. I'll be at Heroes Con this weekend, mostly at the Ad House Books booth, plugging my other graphic novel that's coming out in October called FCHS, which is drawn by Emily and Seth Ross. The very first graphic novel, it was a free Comic Book Day comic, so you might have seen it, but Rachel, it's her first book. Never went to school. She's totally, you know.
Never went to any school.
No,
wow.
Never.
How do you know things?
But she's
she just
gonna
a
be
giant
the next
walking.
But she's gonna be the next big thing.
Like,
so
I can't see the people in the audience. So it's possible. You should also plug that it's your birthday today.
Oh,
yeah. Happy birthday! Yeah!
Wow! Next week on the show, we're going to have Jessica Abel, who is the author of La Perdita, an incredible graphic novel, and Tom Hart, who is the author of the awesome Hutch Owens.
Yeah.
Also, you can check us out almost every almost every day of the week at youtube.com/comicbookclub. A couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Andres for being on the show.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Guys, we're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thanks, all.